Paul, so stoked for you to be here, man.
Sean, thank you for having me, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we've been running the same circles in Vancouver and in the entrepreneurship community, and also as guys out there repping mental health and stuff like that. And yet we haven't really crossed paths. So I'm excited to finally connect the dots and to have a chat about how men can address their mental health and other topics like that.
You know me, man. I'm always down for it. Have an honest conversation about this topic is, I think it's ideal. It's the way to go about it.
Yeah, totally. And one of the reasons why I was excited to get you on is because from the outside, it looks like you've at different points had it all, right? And I've had guys tell me this when they look at my Facebook living in Mexico and these things. And I look at you and you went to Louisiana State University, played baseball there. You even got drafted by the Toronto Blue Jays, which is pretty cool. You know, you're obviously 6'7". You've done some modeling, gotten some attention from the ladies. I even saw some videos of you on the NHL Network. Being featured on there, going to Canucks games and meeting all the players and stuff. So looking at you, it's like, whoa, this guy's got, you know, the world on a string. So I love chatting with guys about the reality of life and what they're actually feeling and experiencing at times, especially when they're high achievers like you.
Yeah, man, I appreciate that. Thank you for calling me high achiever. That is a source of pride in me, and it helps me keep going. But at the same time, I realize you can highly achieve for anything and still not get anywhere. So once again, that's another facade. And then in the background, you don't really know what's happening. But yeah, you kind of nailed it with that one.
Yeah, cool. And actually, you know, I love that you took the other thing I really like about you is that you took a dark time for you, which you'll get into, and you turned it into a positive with Nether Loan, your clothing brand that's an advocates for mental health and talking about stuff that people are going through. So well done with that, man.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, it was a tough time, weird time. Actually, I even just completely cut off the clothing. Nether Loan is just a brand as in itself, just on the mental health area. So yeah, no, thank you.
Great, man. Awesome. So I'd love to get into depression and anxiety first. So you're this good looking guy who is like successful, well, relatively successful. You're an athlete, you know, you're a man about town, you're social like me, you're fairly charismatic. I can already tell that. And, how does somebody like you end up depressed or feeling anxiety? That obviously that everybody feels those things, but that's what a lot of people perceive, when they look at others is, oh, that guy's got his shit together. So could you share a little bit about how you ended up in that place and some of the things that led to it?
Definitely. So like if people are watching this by video, they can see me outside in this backyard with sunshine. I can barely see the camera. I'm not going to lie, but I wanted to be outside.
Cause you look great. Sunshine. You look great.
There we go. So yeah, I look great. I got this beer. Some people call it Jesus. Who knows? Or like Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
And everything's going on, but man, about like successful, I'm $60,000 in debt right now. So I don't know what you call success, but I'm 36 year old with $60,000 in debt. Living at my mom's house, and I've been here for 2 years.
Yes.
So there is that whole facade of what success
perception is.
Perception, yeah. Right, and what's going on actually in the reality. So that is where I really am as me, myself, a human. Luckily, a lot of the work I've done, I feel comfortable saying that I don't have an issue with it. I'm not embarrassed by it like I used to be. But for me to get to this point, that's a really long story. Let's try and make it short as possible. I think that's what you asked in the question, because I just went off completely on something else.
No, that's great. I love the transparency there. I love the candidness, because especially in these podcasts, people try to put their best foot forward. And now I'm at the point where when people ask me how I'm doing, I'm like, not great today, man. I'm not feeling good. And I love that you're just like, I'm in debt. I'm at my parents' house right now. I was there a few years ago. So, you know, that's the reality of being a human. Most, it's not all good all the time.
Yeah.
So I love that. Yeah. So the question was, you know, how did you end up in a first dealing with depression and anxiety in those early days after your sports career ended and stuff like that?
First thing is I realize now after I've done everything, I actually had a whole bunch of this anxiety and depression during my sports career. I just was building up so many walls that I just didn't know what that was, or it just became so normal that was my part of my everyday life. The big factor that came into play that kind of was a catalyst for this whole last 5-6 years of hardship, but also growth, was I went through a tough breakup after a 3-year relationship, a breakup that turned into some other things that happened through her own mental health focus and work, which then pushed off onto me. Essentially, within 10 months, like, I was showing signs of PTSD symptoms due to a bunch of things that had happened. So that was really shook up my life. I'd never felt that before. I never thought I was going to. At that same time, my dad got diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. And then a year later, he passed from cancer. During those last 6 months, he was completely just falling apart from the Parkinson's. It was insane from 1 year what the difference is. A man who could go on his bike to someone who could barely stand up or do anything or recognize me. And that shook me a lot more than I thought. So yeah, that was really the start, beginning, halfway through of my depression, anxiety. Like, that was a full year of things leading up, but at the same time, like, it had already kicked in. And then post dad dying, post relationship completely over, I had like 18 months of like, okay, this is done, but I'm still feeling horrible, like horrible. I had zero happiness, zero joy in my life. And I sat with it for a while. It affected my work, affected everything I did. And then, I don't know, some days in, I was like, I don't know, I think 6 months in, I'm like, this isn't changing. I need to start doing something, because it's like, I'm working out, I'm going to therapy, I'm doing all these things that should be helping me, but I'm like, what can I really do? And that's when I first started actually like working on my mental health and my depression and my anxiety, and really just working on me, which kind of helped me go past and work through all those things.
Yeah, good for you, man. It's nice that you got that. You're lucky they got to that point where you actually decided to work on you, because a lot of guys will never get there. No, I'm fine. Everything's fine, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely. It's admitting to yourself that there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And that's what a lot of people are too afraid to do. They're not going to tell anyone else if they can't tell themselves.
No.
That's for damn sure.
Totally. What did depression feel like when you were in it? Like, what did it feel like at the beginning, and then what did it feel like as it got worse, and then how did you come to know it?
For me, it was like, really, it was a loss of sad, like a loss of joy. I never felt happy. One thing I remember is I booked a commercial, and like the commercial payout was like $10,000, and essentially I worked 3 hours for that $10,000. Where most people are like, oh yeah, all right, awesome, stoked. And I was like, okay. And then I kind of walked to the door. I'm like, let's go to the gym. Like, I just had, there was nothing, there was no acceptance or anything inside me. It was like, oh, this is pretty cool. Or this is, at least something's going on here. That was obviously an extreme thing. But like, other than that, like, there was no relationship joy. There was no family joy. There was no happiness when I went home to see my mom and my sister, who were still alive. And I should be, you know, grateful for that. I had nothing. And obviously when you're missing out on joy, you're missing out on motivation. You're missing out on, sexual tension, looking to see a partner, looking to have sex, looking to feel wanted, looking for companionship, friendship. So all those things were affected. So that's what depression felt like for me.
Yeah. I like how you worded that. And so when you got to that point where you're like, okay, this isn't changing and I need to get out of this, or I need to take action steps towards getting myself out of this. What were your first steps? I guess that's the question. What were your first steps? Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds like a good question for it. My first step was to admit that I needed to do something. And my second step was, man, I'm going to go online and see what the hell other people are doing. Like, that really was my step. Like, I don't know. I've never done this before. And I went online and I started reading blogs and I started listening to podcasts. And actually, this is the reason why I started Never Alone, because I actually think most of online content is horrible around mental health. I didn't connect with anything that any big government said, because there was no lifeblood, there was no passion, there was no human talking to me. And then I didn't really connect with any advocate, because they were so far to one side, I couldn't relate to them as a human being, me, a 30-year-old male. I'm like, oh, y'all messed up too.
Totally.
So That's why Never Alone is what it is now. But what the biggest thing that I found was helpful was actually I didn't focus on mental health. I focused on personal growth. And for personal growth, I looked at Tim Ferriss. I looked at a bunch of people that inspired me in business and other ways of life. And then I changed their kind of mindset and concept that they did for growth in business and themselves. And I'm like, well, let me think of that as my mental health. So that was really how I did it. And I started with a morning routine. Really, that's the first thing I did. Yeah. First thing I did, I learned, I read a book, one of Tim Ferriss's books, and it talked about like, talked like 100 people on what they did to better themselves as humans and businesses. And like 70% of them said morning routine, and they gave a little list of what they did. I looked up online for lists of more stuff. I'm like, okay, here's 8 things I'm going to try. Make my bed, cold shower. Thank you, Wim Hof.
Meditation.
Hot lemon water, meditation, journaling, coffee. And at the end, don't pick your phone up until you're done. I'm like, okay, there we go. I'm going to try this 50-minute routine. Obviously, it's really damn hard to do anything right away, especially not look at your phone when you're so used to doing it for 20 years. So I actually did my first 2 weeks of routine where I think probably 3 minutes long.
Yeah.
And then probably the end of the month off, I might have done 5 minutes. And then in the second month, I probably did 15 minutes. And then third, I did 20 minutes. So like it took me a very long time to create my 60-minute routine. I think it took me 6 months. And then it would took me about 8 months to actually feel comfortable doing it, not looking at my phone, going through this thing. So that was my start. And like really where I won on that is I didn't give up. Like if I had a shit day and I woke up and I was like, I just started crying in my shower. Cause at that time I was doing that at times. Actually, I was doing that quite a bit, just breaking down. Like, why am I feeling like this? And I would just break down. Like, why am I feeling like this? Why can't I stop it? I would stop my routine and I'd go back to bed cause I just didn't have the motivation to do it. But where I won was that night, I'm like, okay, I'm going to try and beat that one step. I'm going to get out of the shower and do my next thing. And that's what I did. I treated it like I was a beginner at working out. I treated it like I was at something like that. Like, what is my first steps and how can I make this a consistent long-term thing?
Oh man, that's such an effective approach. You know, like James Clear with Atomic Habits talks about how just breaking something down to something really simple, doing one push-up, writing one page, and you just summarize that starting with 3 minutes because it's more about consistency and just tonnage. The more you can do it, you know, the more it's going to stick. And I see in myself and in a lot of guys in men's group, for example, they try to take on a whole bunch more habits and it's just overwhelming. So thanks for that reminder. That's great. I also really like how you took the frameworks of like, and this is a really interesting way to think for a lot of guys out there who are listening and maybe trying to think about how to approach their personal growth or dealing with their mental health issues. It's like taking frameworks from around business and around other parts of life from Tim Ferriss or whoever appeals to you and applying it to your mental health. I really like that as well. So,
yeah. And you know what? Forget those other people, like whatever you're good at.
Yeah.
Like Sean, if you're good at business, mm-hmm. well then let's figure out how you run your business properly. So you can then put it down to a personal level or how you can run yourself properly.
Yeah.
If you're a good chef, if you're good, like whatever you're good at, use that as your catalyst to be like, okay, how did I get good at this? What do I do daily to do well? And then how can I transition to somewhere else? See, like I was a personal trainer before this for 15 years. And like, that's what I would use. Half the time I couldn't train the person because they didn't get it from that angle to start off. So I'd be like, what are you good at? What do you like doing? How do you do that? Let's convert that into the gym so you can understand things better. And then we started going it. So yeah, you got to go off something that you're comfortable with. Use that as your blueprint.
Yeah, not, and not just comfortable with it. Sounds like it uses your natural strengths and the way you naturally think and approach the world and where that's already been applied successfully, applying that to your mental health. That makes so much sense. That's great.
Yeah.
I love that. And you talked about the loss of your father as well. And I really appreciate you bringing that up because that's a topic that's really common in men's group is dealing with loss, whether it be through a breakup or losing a loved one, or it could just be a simple thing as a pet, like pet loss, losing a dog or something. What did you learn about grief and mourning and losing somebody close to you?
As a man? I laugh. Yeah. I'm laughing now because I'm laughing because it was essentially we're coming up to his, I think, fourth year.
Yeah.
I don't know. Death anniversary. I don't even know what you call it. That's also why I laugh. Like, I have to laugh about this situation because you have to. Like, I don't know what it's called. But we're coming up to his fourth year anniversary.
Yeah.
And man, to be honest with you, I just talking with my therapist, and we'll talk more into something later because I know you want to talk about psychedelics.
Yes. Yeah.
But talking with my therapist 3 weeks ago, I realized I actually hadn't grieved. I didn't, because I didn't know how to grieve. I didn't know what grief was. And I also personally have I've made a bunch of walls and a bunch of things in my life due to my younger days, due to relationships, non-relationships, one night stands. I have a hard time connecting with people emotionally and allowing myself to connect, because once emotional connection happens, I run away. And a lot of grief is like emotional connection. Like, you really have to accept that it's there. Talk to those around you who are like it the same way. And actually like verbally go out. I think that's what it is. That's what I think it is. And I just didn't have anyone to do that with because I didn't feel comfortable doing it. So like my mom or my sister, like we haven't had those conversations. And there was no one else for me to have that conversation with. So yeah, man, I'm not the person to answer on that because I actually haven't grieved until these last 2 weeks. Something happened that I did, a therapy journey that has helped a lot. But yeah, grief's a tough one, man. They don't practice that in school.
No. So you're this guy, you're a guy like a lot of guys who was never taught how to grieve or feel anything or even connect emotionally with people, which is like, I think the majority of people are avoidant in that way. At least in my experience, and similar to you, I've met a lot of people and been in a lot of relationships and it seems like that's the default. You know, what did it feel like to actually start to get into grief? What was the experience actually like?
Scary, because I'd never done before. Everything that you do for a new time at first is like, I don't want to do this, and your body fights it and rejects it, as in like shaking muscles, tight, tense, my jaw goes everywhere, I grind my teeth, like it's like, yeah, like that's what happens to me when I get something new that kind of shakes my boundaries and barriers,
and that, you know, is going to be painful. Like, you know, it's yeah, gonna, you know, it's going to hurt.
Yeah, that part,
you know, you're
too.
Signing up for pain.
Which will then lead to something positive, but at the first bit's gonna suck. What I started to do is like talk more out loud when he isn't here, saying stuff like, thank you, I appreciate everything you've done, and going through it. And when I'm really, I can say that now and be like, fine, but like if I'm in the moment, the photos around him or music playing that he liked, or if I'm thinking of something and then I go, then things start coming out and I start tearing up and crying. And it's like, I'm actually letting those emotions out, getting them out there into the world, which I know is what I need to do. For me, that's the area of grief that I'm in right now.
Talking about getting into emotions, like that's something that a lot of guys have trouble with in men's group in general. So aside, grief aside, like, have you found other emotions hard to express or get into?
Oh yeah, man. Love. Like, I would never say I love you to someone. And if I did, I would be first, before I'd even say it, I think, can I say this to this person without them then expecting something from me and me feeling like I have to like be beholden to them, and then me feeling like I might break something.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying like, man, I love you because I respect you, I appreciate you.
Totally.
And you're just a good person. So that's love, which I'm getting more comfortable at saying. But the thing is, once you say something, once you change something, you have to keep doing it. Like, so I have to keep saying it and make it more comfortable and kind of expand on it and give people hugs and do all those things that aren't looking manly. But once you start doing them, you realize, yeah, they can be. So yeah, like really, I'm not anymore, but within the last, you know, 4 years I've worked on it. But prior to that, like I am essentially emotionally void. Like, I've learned to like cut everything off. Yeah, like that was essentially my first 30 years of life. 32, probably. Emotionally void.
Same. 32 for me. And then I got sick.
Yeah.
And then I had to unwind all the shit that it caused. Yeah. Exactly.
It's kind of cool how, because it sounds like you got sick and you had to go through and unwind. Like, I had to go with my lowest lows of essentially getting PTSD and then watch my father die. But, like, you're there at the bottom and you're like, well, shit, may as well freaking go over these things that have been holding me back, because nothing can feel worse than this. So let's attack it. Which is cool, but at the same time, it sucks because you're like, I don't want everyone to have to get to this low point to be able to figure themselves out. So
no, and some people they win the, I don't know, emotional or genetic lottery, and they don't have to go to a place like that. But most people do.
True.
And the vast majority do. And Yeah, like in those dark times, I had to face, okay, without that social life being fulfilling, without work life succeeding, I too was in hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt in my mid-20s. Yeah. So I was close to $500,000.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay, man, I can throw a lot more onto that line.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I just went bankrupt. That's the only difference. So, yeah, you know, when you strip away, especially all these things that guys like you and I cling, like, oh, everybody clings to things to feel better about themselves. For me, it was women. Like, because that's something I always had a relatively easy time with, similar to, I imagine, you. And so when that went away, when the business achievements went away, when speaking at conferences went away, similar to what I see from your, like, just quick Google, I had some media pieces done on me that were pretty cool and made people go, wow, what a life Sean's living. And in reality, emotionally, I was just numb and struggling. And then when I lost all that, when I got sick and was literally bedridden and living in my parents' basement, same thing as you at like 32, I was faced the question of like, well, who am I without all those things? Yeah. And that's probably the most valuable lesson I've ever had. Like, how can I feel good about myself with all that taken away? You know?
Yeah.
And it sounds like you went through a similar process.
Definitely. Sometimes you just got to hit those lows.
That's the hero's journey, right? Joseph Campbell. It's like you got to hit the lows to learn the lessons to then get to a better place.
Makes sense. I see it now. Like, I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have that. I can tell you that much. I would not have been here talking to you if I didn't have these things happen.
No. And you might not have even fully seen the fruits of it yet. Like, it took a long time for me.
I freaking hope not. Yeah. No, I definitely know I haven't seen the fruits of it because I'm not making an income. So
yeah, exactly.
If this is the top, I made the wrong choice.
But ironically, like, the more I got into the emotional stuff, the more I cleared that out, the more all of a sudden my financial life started to flow. And I think it's because those emotional blocks that I had also applied to my work life, you know?
I can see that 100%. Yeah, and that's, I think that's what a lot of people don't understand or hear but don't really believe is like, yeah, changing in one area of your life will probably help positively affect all the rest of them if you start opening up and allow them to. Like, just like, you know, fitness. If you start working out more, you're probably more mentally healthy. If you start going to therapy more, your probably physical fitness will be healthier and you'll lose more weight and do the body type you want. Income, friends, everything, like, that all works together. If you're feeling good in all aspects of a life, they're just going to keep cycling and help you. If you have one down, it's going to affect everything else.
Yeah, it's true. One thing you said earlier was interesting that I thought I'd love to hear your perspective on is you said, now you feel that expressing emotions is manly. Could you explain that for guys that may not have, because that's a new concept for a lot of guys, including me.
Here we go.
At like early 30s. Why is it manly to express emotions? Yeah.
We're a bunch of guys talking about situation, and where I'm going to say it is manly, or it is a positive thing for a man to do. How about, let's go with that.
Yeah, sure.
In the last 3 weeks, I've definitely been more open about my emotions. What I am looking for in life, what I'm unsure of what I'm looking for at life. I don't know what I want or where I want to go, but I just need to test the waters and see within a relationship, polyamorous. I always get that word wrong. Essentially multiple relationships in one, but being open to those people and those partners, and essentially just instead of having one night stands, you have multiple people that you are emotionally connected with. Even just connection with my mom saying, I love you, my sister saying, I love you, thank you, and all that stuff. The more I've talked about it far more in the last 3 weeks openly and not hiding behind something, not saying it so that the person I'm talking to thinks, wants me to hear, like wants to hear it. Like, I'm not just kind of altering it for their ears and like, that's what I think they want to hear. I'm actually just saying it for myself. Everything out that I feel truly believe in for them to hear. And because of that, I have had more interesting, open, real conversations with females and people that I'm attracted to and would like to perhaps have a relationship with and to do things. And it has just gone a lot smoother. I have felt more confident in myself, and they seem to have more confidence and interest in me, even though some of the same things I'm saying are probably not they would expect coming from a guy like me. Just being honest, open, and real with someone who you're attracted to, either male or female or whatever it may be, they can read that. People can call bullshit. People smell it. They feel it. They smell fear. They smell someone who's just trying to swindle them. And they smell someone who they know is trying to swindle them because they don't understand themselves at the time. And they're not being honest with themselves. So for me, saying love and stuff like that, like before, would have been fake because I just didn't know what it was. I'm still trying to learn what it is, but I'm much more confident in the usage of the word and how it connects with me. So yeah, that was really all over the place, but this is the first time I really had that conversation. So it took a bit to get out.
Yeah, totally. In observing men's groups on my side, I've observed that, like, one guy put it pretty simply. He said, it's kind of cowardly to like be scared of your own feelings. Like, it's understandable, it's but like one. These things are inside of you. This isn't an external force that's going to kill you. These are your feelings, bro. And you're scared to like admit that you have these feelings and stuff like that. And on the other side, like if you're expressing yourself honestly and truthfully, there's no, it actually lessens the risk out there in the world because you're showing up more truthfully at the risk of being judged by others. That sounds pretty masculine and manly, you know, just like showing up boldly regardless of how they might interpret you. I like that. Yeah, that is a good perspective on the emotions and men thing. I mean, you mentioned meditation and gym. Are there any other things you're doing, like journaling or anything that's been particularly impactful for you in your personal growth journey?
Yeah, I say meditation, but like I'm no meditator. I make time. I've been much better. I make time in the morning and evening. It's probably 8 to 10 minutes max, but it's at least just to calm down. I sit in quiet. There we go. So I'll call it meditation. Journal. I journal every morning for sure. And for the people that want to journal, like it's hard. Like you don't just go to be like, okay. And then in a month in, you're writing a full page every morning with no problem. Like for me, it was a struggle to find the words, to spend the time, to not want to leave the thing. So it was a very hard on-off start for me. So if you don't get it within the first 3 to 4 months, don't worry about it. In time, if you just keep it up, you will get comfortable. But I journal every morning. I do meditation morning, evening. I work out, obviously.
What about the journaling works for you in particular? What do you like about it? How do you journal?
I do in the morning, so I just talk about my last day, really. I just talk about like a positive thing or a negative thing, or maybe if I have something coming up in my head that does make me stressed out, I'll talk about it. I usually keep it in the general 48-hour vicinity. Or else if I have something that massive just happened, like I got a big win, I changed like my mindset, I go like I hug someone and I showed emotion to someone which I would never show them before, I'll definitely talk about something like that just to get it out of my head and onto paper. I don't go back and read it. I have not read anything that I've written in the last 3 years.
Neither have I. That's funny. Some people do. My girlfriend goes back and she's like, oh wow, look where I was and look where I am today. I'm like, no, I don't want to look. I can't look at that.
It's talking about like I won't, man, I'm not going to listen to this podcast or watch it or ever do anything like if I was there, I know what I said I was part of. Like I don't need to go back to it. So that's how I am with everything I do. Like I don't want to watch, listen or read anything that I did because I already did it. And then work out. I don't know, man, eat healthy, like really eat clean foods that your body can digest and your brain can use and your gut can use. Like I've started to really connect with the foods I eat. Like I used to eat a lot of like pizza, donuts, ice cream, you name it. Like I'm 235, got up to like 270, like trying to hit the bodybuilding stuff. I didn't realize how much it like congested me. First of all, like congested, like it was hard for me to digest food and like pass it. Like it was sitting in my gut for 4 days and it's very uncomfortable in your stomach. I just got used to it. But like starting to eat like more complex carbs, doing stuff, vegetables, doing stuff like that and less sugar and less like shit food. I like mentally I'm in a better place and I can notice the difference when I don't. If I eat like a freaking 12 pack of cookies in the afternoon one day, like I'm gonna feel like crap. Not worried about my body and fat, but worried about like my head. I just won't be as happy. I'll be a little bit of anxiety. I'll find a little bit of depression for sure. Mm-hmm. It just does it. Yeah.
Would you say that the junk food is your primary vice, maybe besides women? For me, it is, man. That's always been my thing, and I still struggle with it. I know all the science about healthy eating. I've been through all this health adversity, and I still sometimes slip and eat an entire pack of cookies in the afternoon, like what you say, you know?
To be honest with you, I'm not a guy that has vices. Like, yeah. I don't get addicted to shit. Like, even women. Like, I will go, like, 4 or 5 months without anything and not worry about it.
Oh, good.
Not any, like, I really just don't. Booze, MD, like drugs, like I don't do hard drugs, but like Molly is to party with. I've never needed anything. I don't get that itch. Like I need this to now. And the food is that because I hate snack. I don't snack. Like I'll eat meals. So no, I'm going to say no.
I'm envious of that. Like to me, you're successful in that way. Seeing all the videos and photos of you with your shirt off. I'm like, fuck, look how fit this guy is. I used to be fit like that, you know? So it's funny perceived success versus, you know, like yeah. How we define others' success versus our own, you know?
Yeah. Very.
Let's get into the fun topic. Let's get into the psychedelics.
Oh, yeah.
I actually was refreshed of you. I see you on their Facebook feed every once in a while because we're Facebook friends. But a friend of mine who's in men's group, more of a client, but he's also a buddy, an older guy. He reached out and said, hey, I saw you know this guy, Paul, Tall Paul. And he's talked about openly about MDMA therapy. And that's something that he was interested in trying. And he wanted to know my thoughts on it. So I shared my experience with my limited experience with psychedelics thus far and the incredible impact they've had on my life. And I was curious to hear about yours because I haven't done the MDMA therapy. That is something I'd like to try.
Have you done therapeutic drugs or have you just done drugs with yourself in a setting where you're trying to work on yourself? Have you done it with a guide? Anything?
I personally have not done it with guides yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why quickly, because I've had friends guide me. I've not had professionals guide me because my girlfriend did an experience like that and didn't have a good experience because she felt like she was being analyzed. It was in an office building setting and it wasn't a good setup. And I've had friends have similar experiences. So I'm still waiting for the right opportunity to do a guided experience where the set and setting feels right.
Yeah. Definitely. Sure. We can start on, let's start on that.
Yeah. Just quickly. Like, how did you get to this point? So you're trying to work through.
I'll get there.
Okay. I'll get there.
I just want to get this out for the listeners in case someone's like, yeah, I want to fucking do this.
Fantastic. Yeah, totally.
So like going. I have done MDMA therapy and that was with a registered therapist who was guiding me.
Yeah.
And I also just 2 weeks ago did an LSD journey, which you haven't, I'm told anyone, I haven't said it out loud. And that helped a lot with my grief and everything that I've been talking about. I also do microdose mushrooms, and I have for like 4 or 5 years. And that is partly definitely mental health, partly business growth, but a bunch of stuff. So MDMA therapy and LSD journey is what it was called. It's been with the same therapist. So it's my therapist that I use. And we have... Unlike what your girlfriend did and other friends, I've done 3 to 9 therapy sessions prior without a drug, setting the intention for that day, which I think is the biggest mistake anyone can make is let me just hop into this thing right away and not know the fucking person. However, though, until now, they haven't been studying it. There's no way you can do it properly. We haven't figured that out. There's no guidebook because it's illegal. So I understand why these situations do happen. However, for anyone out there, I highly hope and suggest that you invest the $1,000 prior getting therapy sessions and then paying the amount to get that one guided session. And then also you stick on after. If the therapist is good and knows what they're doing, they will offer you, my therapist offers me 3 months of free therapy post to make sure I'm a good space mentally and I can reach out anytime and talk to them because these things can take you on a path that you never expected to happen.
Yeah, well said.
That is a thing right there that I think everyone just needs to take and it needs to be said more often. And it will be said more often once it becomes legal, I'm sure, because there will be standards and backgrounds that people follow. But at this time, it's kind of the Wild West out there. That's what you get. You get some shitty experiences, which is going to hurt it becoming legal because people will just hear the shitty ones more than they hear the positive ones.
Mm-hmm. Potentially. It's moving down that track in Canada, though.
Yeah. You know, no, definitely. It's going a good way, but you're obviously going to have some bad experiences. It's just going to happen like anything else, booze, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So we'll start off at the beginning, though. My MDMA therapy, why it happened and took place was... This was like 18 months after, 12 months after my dad died. essentially, this was me doing my morning routine every morning, going to work out daily, 6 days a week, eating healthy, going to therapy at least once a week for multiple months, and then probably two times a month for others. And I was thinking, journaling, meditating. I'm like, 8 months, I'm doing everything. I'm getting a lot better. I was getting a lot better. And I was promoting online, like, this is how you can help your mental health. And it is a way. It is a great way that people should help their mental health. You don't always have to be going to therapy and doing stuff. That should be part of it. But yeah, you need to supplementate yourself because yes, you have 23 hours the rest of the day. But I came to a point where I was like, I'm getting there, but I'm not there. Like, I still feel shit. I still don't feel happy. I still have these things. I'm like, I can't keep this up. Like, I'm good, but I don't want to be like this when I'm 50. Set up a meeting with my therapist. I'm like, this is my thoughts. I think I'm going to go and take antidepressants. Like, I never thought I would have. Yeah. I'm not against them. I didn't really want to go down that path of trying to find it. And then if I do feel better, I have to wean myself off and all this other things. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to be on it. But she's like, I think you should too. I'm like, okay. Went to social media, to be honest with people on my Instagram. Like, so I say you can do all these things and be healthy and mentally happy. Well, it looks like for me, I need this extra little boost because I'm just not getting to that point. A friend then DM me saying, have you thought about psychedelics? I'm like, yeah, I've heard Tim Ferriss. I listened to Joe Rogan. And she says, well, I have a contact for you. And that's really where I lucked out. I got given a contact by a friend to my therapist who I use now. And from what I'm finding out from everyone else who messages me, like your friend and every other 100 of the people that have messaged me,
yeah,
is you can't find anyone to do this because it is illegal. No one advertises it. And you have to get like a handshake into the group. I'm very lucky. I got the handshake right away.
Yeah.
So that is why I did the MDMA therapy. Because I was like just missing out. I just couldn't get that last step.
Yeah. You couldn't crack open whatever that was inside of you.
Yeah. And that wasn't the last step, but it was a major step that I needed to take. Yeah. I just couldn't figure it out. Couldn't get done with everything I was doing. So got the new therapist. We did our 9 sessions of prior to, just so she could understand me, I could understand her, because you are on a drug, you want to be comfortable with the person. And then we talked about my father, my relationship, my growing up as when I was like 7. Did the MDMA therapy session, which was a 6-hour essentially session high on MDMA. I took 2 caps. I took 1 to start off at 10 a.m. And then the second one halfway through, and MDMA, if no one's taken it, like it's a drug that you talk, like you're not going to go sit there and just like put the mask on and lay there for 6 hours and just be by yourself. No,
you get chatty. Yeah,
you get chatty. So it's a very, out of the 3 from what I've heard and learned, you have like MDMA is like your bottom tier. It kind of shakes everything up a little bit, just simmers it. Then if you're going to do a psychedelic mushroom one, that kind of opens up things a little bit more, takes you into a different place. And then what I just did recently was this psychedelics LSD acid, and it completely was like an atom bomb to your world. And it definitely was. Mm-hmm. MDMA compared to LSD, it's not even freaking close. Mm-hmm. But MDMA, that's what it was. It was talking with my therapist, talking about everything. And when you're on MDMA, you're like willing to have those conversations that would make you uncomfortable when you're not. We talked about everything, relationships, past, a bunch of stuff. And what happened from it was like, yeah, I had a really good 3 to 6 months later on where I felt happier. But the biggest thing was I stopped being afraid of failing. That was one thing that in my life that really held me back from stuff. And I stopped being afraid. I realized I could start something, I could lose, fail, but then I could learn how to not fail the next time I attempted it and attempt the next thing just right away and keep doing it. And that barrier, that wall of fear kind of went away. And then I kept practicing it and it became easier and just didn't show up again. That's when I started Never Alone. I didn't know how to create a clothing line, which was at that time. I didn't know how to build a website. I didn't know how to find a producer in Lahore, Pakistan. I didn't know how to do this. And I was like, fuck it, let's make this thing up. And I did it. And here I am today, which the site, everything looks completely different. But if I didn't start then, I wouldn't be here. So I'm really grateful for that experience. However, though, like the LSD one was the one that really, that was our focus with the grief with my father, realizing that I didn't share that. That came up during it. And also this sense of not knowing how to love people and what it may look like for me. and this polyamorous like kind of shimmered into the thing, like maybe this is a thing that is something I could connect with. And that was the two main factors on this last one. But taking LSD, I took like 600 micrograms, which is three tabs. And you just go into a place, a crazy, crazy place inside your head for 4 hours. And there's not, you, I've heard of people talking during it, but I didn't. And it was, yeah, a lot of crying, a lot of seeing my dad, a lot of, it was intense. And I would not, highly not suggest people do that on their own. And I definitely would not suggest doing that with someone you just met. Like, this is something that you need to prepare for.
Oh, fantastic, man. It very much models mine. And you said something really interesting in there that you said in the MDMA part of it, that you felt safe to have the conversations. What was it about the experience on MDMA that made you feel safe to get into some of those conversations?
Well, I don't know about you, man. Have you ever partied on MDMA?
I haven't. Well, yes, but only a little bit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, when you're partying on MDMA, like, you're willing to tell any girl that, like, I like you, I love you, I want to do something for you. Or you're willing to tell someone you're close to that, like, yeah, I'll definitely have a relationship with you. I'm ready to take that moment. You're just these things that hold you back, that make you fearful because of your fear of commitment, your fear of whatever it may be. The wall's gone at that time with MDMA. Like, that's that level that it's at. You're willing to have a deep conversation and not, you don't think about, I stopped thinking about what the repercussions of me having this conversation with them would be for 3 weeks from now. What does that mean I'm putting myself into? What am I holding myself down to? What's going to be anchoring me from being the person I want to be? And that's what the MDMA does. It helps you just open up and realize it's not going to anchor you down. It's not going to hold you back. It's just a damn conversation that you're willing to have. And you've been wanting to have for the last like 20 years, but you've just been too afraid. So that's what MDMA is. Just for me, it was a relationship. For someone else, who knows what it is, but most likely those things that are on the back of your head that you're just not willing to say out loud because you're too afraid, that will come out in a very comfortable way.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because consistently through my friends who've done the MDMA therapy or who have done their own MDMA therapy with guides or friends or whatever, that's the consistent thing, is that experiences of safety. And because you feel safe, you're able to get into whatever stuff it is that you need to get into. And also because all the self-judgment stuff goes away, apparently you can experience self-love for like the first time. Yeah.
You nailed it. That right there is a huge thing. Yeah. You stop judging yourself and you stop judging your actions.
Yeah. And I don't know if a lot of people, myself included, have ever gotten to that place, you know, like 100% I can't say that I'm just self-judgment free for one day of my life, you know, probably not.
I'm sure. Who knows? I don't know. I can tell you right now, in the last 3 weeks, I've been probably the least self-judgmental I've ever been. And I felt this is the happiest I've ever felt.
Yeah. Because of it. What I find interesting about your story as well is how impactful LSD was on you, because I haven't done LSD yet, but my friends who've done these different therapies, a lot of them say that MDMA is the peak because of the safety experience, like that lack of self-judgment, self-acceptance. I feel safe to get into some of this stuff. It was like profound. LSD for a lot of them was just like a crazy trip. You know, for me, I haven't done any of the mushrooms has been phenomenal for cracking things open, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it is interesting how it can be different for everybody, like which kind of therapy is most impactful, you know?
Yeah. And that's a good thing. And the thing is, no, everyone's journey is their own journey. You don't know what you need until you go do it. Like, you can only guess about what you need and you can only assume what's going to happen, but you really don't know until you do these things. And the thing is, what your therapist will tell you is that you should not ever go in expecting something. See, my guess is your friends were going in, I want to do this with that LSD journey. And it was, if you're fighting the journey and you're fighting where it wants to take you, yeah, you're going to have a bad trip and a bad journey and you're not going to get to those places it's trying to lead you. That's what I learned from it. So like, the biggest thing is this accepting what happens in these next 4 hours to 8 hours and just go down the path it wants to take you. And I fought it. Like, I woke up from it and my teeth were ground, and I went through and I remember flexing and I was going like this, and my triceps were actually sore because how much I was clenching, fighting what it was going to take me. Mm-hmm. However, though, when I did allow it to in some points, I actually like breathed, everything relaxed completely, and I took the most deepest, biggest breaths I've ever taken in my life. I still remember that in my head, those breaths, the fighting and the allowing things to happen. So yeah, definitely, everyone's on their own journey. So what I'm saying, don't expect to happen to you.
Yeah. I think that we said in the beginning, though, about intentionality is probably the most important thing. And I love what you said about having a bunch of sessions with that person beforehand to become comfortable with them and also to get clear on your intention. I've heard that over and over again in my guides, my babysitters or caretakers or whatever you want to call them. I did it in a very safe, I did it in my apartment with my two closest friends who are very experienced, and one of them's in the mental health field. And, you know, I'd heard for years, do you want to be intentional? I kept seeing friends have success with these things, like normal guys, kind of like you and I, just like sports guys or whatever, you know, guys that I was friends with doing these things and having tremendous impacts on their anxiety levels, depression levels, getting through old triggers, old responses. And I was like, okay, there's something to this. So I decided to do it. And I'm lucky because I've done a lot of work on myself already. I've probably done 1,000 hours in therapy, you know, so I feel like I've been able to be very clear about what I want out of the experience, yeah. Not from the where the trip's going to take me, but the intention. This is the thing, yeah. I'd like to get to know better and befriend or resolve. Yeah. And 100% of the time it has gone there, and always in ways and from different angles than I expected. Sometimes it's darker and scarier, and I end up spending 6 hours crying and shaking and convulsing and, you know, just like, oh man, so intense. And other times it's more funny, and, you know, but that intentionality seems to be the key to all of it.
Yeah, that definitely is. It sounds definitely woo-woo. I'm not that guy a bunch of times. Like, you have to intention, you have to be this. And I'm not like that 24/7, but in those times and those places, like, yeah, intention. But like, really, if you're like against it, you just have to open up, allow what to happen is going to happen. Mm-hmm. You can't force anything. It just won't happen.
Yeah, I think the challenge of the lack of intentionality of this stuff is that just how these things can be used for partying, you can just have a good time and you can just trip out and that can be a good experience. But if you want to use them to crack open stuff, and that's how my doctor described it, one of my mentors who's one of the top functional medicine doctors in Canada, he said, you know, Sean, psychedelics aren't going to solve your problems, but they'll help you get into them and crack them open and understand different parts of them. And then if you integrate that, then it can help you get past it. And that has been the experience for me. However, if I wasn't intentional about this is the thing I want to work on, I don't know if that would have happened. I don't think it would have.
Yeah, shit. Well, if that's for you, then I believe you, man, because you know yourself better than I do. But
well, It sounds like it was the same for you, you know?
Yeah, it was. It was definitely out of tension. My intention was just to be open and honest with it and see what happens. I didn't really know where it was going to go. Those things actually weren't. Obviously, my dad was something in my mind, but last time on the MDMA, my dad was something in my mind, and I think I spent 5 minutes talking about him. So that didn't happen at all. So yeah, that's kind of guy I am, though. Like, I just kind of, of course I want to be successful, do these things, work hard, but at the same time, it's like, if I don't know shit, I don't know shit. Like, I don't know. I've never done the journey before, so I'm not going to tell what it's going to do. I'm going to tell myself what it's going to do. I'm just kind of here for the ride at this time. So
yeah,
but it was.
Well, I'd say you are successful, man. Like, you know, 60 grand debt, whatever, but like, you're a man who's like owning this shit and sharing it and being an example of like, you're kind of being a role model by talking about this stuff, you know? And, you know, I had a guy reach out just discovering your story. He lives across the continent. Like, you're doing it, man. You're trying to continue to work on yourself, trying to continue to help other people. That to me is my definition of success. So I just wanted to say thanks for being that guy, and well done.
Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it, man. Really.
Yeah. I'm grateful for you helping the guys here at Men's Group. And yeah, Paul, please use me as a resource moving forward, man. And looking forward to having more conversations with you in the future.
Definitely, man. Thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
Yeah, this is fun.